Randaf Kufchaf Aleph Amid Aleph, the first Mishnah, and we continue about the dinim of a fire that broke out on Shabbos. The Mishnah starts with the din of a Nachri that comes forward to put out the fire. Nachri Shebol Chabos, the guy wants to extinguish the fire in the house of the Israel. Ein Omrim Lo Kabei. You shouldn't encourage him by telling him explicitly, put out the fire. The alta chabes ha dleika. In other words, if the guy approaches the Jew and he says, do you want me to put it out? So we're not allowed to say, please put it out. And that has to do with amir l'nachri, that we don't tell a nachri to do a malach on our behalf. But we don't have to tell him, you know, we protest against you, please don't put it out, you know, absolutely not. But rather, we play a passive role, and if the Nachri on his own initiative decides to put out the fire, that's fine. I don't have an obligation to see to it that the guy rests on Shabbos. He's not my Eved, and therefore there's no mitzvah of Levan Yanuach. Now it's more complicated. A Jewish child, a minor, below bar mitzvah, comes to ask if he should put out the fire. And let's say he wants to put it out on his own initiative. Ein shomim lo. We have to prevent him from extinguishing the fire. Neshvi soso alehim. Of course, the gedolim are responsible to make sure that the katan is shoves on Shabbos. Again, it depends on what the age of the katan is, and that Berlina that we'll see in the Gemara. Om Ravi Ami. Now we're talking about a Dleika Yitzel Yisrael B'Shabbos, and there's a guy around. B'Dleika Hitiru Lomar Kol HaMechaba Eino Mafsit. Although we're not allowed to tell the guy explicitly to put out the fire, but there is a leniency in a case of a fire on Shabbos, and you're permitted to make a declaration, Kol HaMechaba Eino Mafsit, meaning implying, although not explicitly, that if anyone comes along and puts out this fire, he will be duly compensated. And again, only in the case of Dleika do we find this, and this is because of Adam Bahul Al-Mamona, a person so distressed about the loss of his money that we're always afraid he might personally extinguish the fire. But with regard to other malachas, we don't find this heter of sort of encouraging the guy to do the malach on your behalf. And even here, in the case of the heter for Dleika, we don't allow him, the Jew, to appoint the guy as his shliach. That kind of language is not acceptable, but only to reveal his das, that he would be very happy if somebody would put it out. Now, what happens, this is the Ritva's question, if the Jew would say, Kol Shomei Koli Yechabe, anybody who hears my voice, please put out the fire. That would be already a Lashon of Shlichus, and the Ritva, although he vacillates about this, he comes to the conclusion that this kind of declaration would be prohibited. The Rosh writes that if he's allowed to say, Kol Mechabe No Mafsid, then he's allowed to call the Nachri, and hopefully when the Nachri comes closer to the place of the fire, he'll get the message, and on his own initiative, he'll put out the fire. The Bahag says that any Dover Sheish Bo Hefseid, he's allowed to say in front of the Nachri, Kol HaMatzil Eino Mafsid. So it's not limited Dafka to a Dleika. But let's say, for example, there's an inundation of a flood for a field, then Kol HaMatzil Eino Mafsid, he's allowed to say this. Name of Misayele, the Gemara wants to bring a proof for Ravi Ami, and quotes our Mishnah. Nachri Shebol HaChavos Eino Memlok Kabei V'Al Techabe V'Nei Shein Tzvi Soso Aleim. So let's read the Mishnah carefully. The Mishnah says, Kabei. that he's not allowed to say the word kabei. But if he says anyone who does take that initiative, that we're allowed to say. The Gemara says, Ema, I can reject that proof. And let's explain the Sefer of the Mishnah when it says, Al techabe. Right, the Mishnah says, let's just read the language of the Sefer of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, so we're not supposed to say to him al techabe. And let's be medayik from that al techabe lo amirale. We're not allowed to say to him, or we're not required to say to him al techabe. Don't put it out and make a big protest about it. But kol amechabe eino mafsid, where he reveals his interest that he would like the guy to put it out. Nami lo amirale. That's also considered prohibited. Because if the Mishnah held that you're allowed to say kol mechabe eino mafsid, why did the Mishnah have to say that he doesn't have to protest? You know, negating a negative. It could be much more positive that he could say kol mechabe eino mafsid. So there's no raya one way or the other whether you're allowed to say to the guy kol mechabe eino mafsid, because although the reisha sounds like what's prohibited is to say kabei, where you directly appoint him as your shliach, implying that kol mechabe would be mutter, but in the Sefer when it says al techabe, that you don't have to protest and you're not required to say, well, don't put it out, the Mishnah could have told you a bigger chiddush and allowed you to say kol mechabe eino mafsid. So we don't have any conclusive evidence from our Mishnah. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa. The Braisa tells us a Maisa about a guy who came to put out a fire. Maisa v'nafla d'leika b'chatzero shel Yisrael. His name was Yosef ben Simai. And he lived in a kfar called Shichin. We mentioned kfar Shichin before in terms of the constitution of the ground in that kfar. Bo anshe gistera. And Gister is referring to the authorities, Shel Tzipori, Lechavos Sadleika. And this fire in the courtyard of Yosef ben Samai is now going to be put out by the authorities in the nearby city of Tzipori, Mipnei Shapitropes Shel Melech Hoya. What was the status of Yosef ben Simoi? He was actually in the king's court. He was one of the officers. And he was in charge of maybe finances in the king's court. And yet Yosef ben Simoi objected, and he did not let the people of the Shilton put out the fire. And the reason for that was Mipnei Kvod HaShabbos. In other words, not because of Iser Shabbos, there's no Iser involved here, even though he knew that the Nochri was coming to put it out. He doesn't have to say Al Techabe, but he was Machme because of Kvod Shabbos. He didn't want anyone to suspect him that maybe he had instructed the non-Jews to put out the fire. So therefore, he objected and he protested and he didn't let them put out the fire. Nasalones. Because of this special chassidus, this midah of chumrah, he had a miracle, v'yardu g'shomim v'kibu, and the rains came down and put out the fire. La'erev, after Shabbos, shiger, l'chol echad mihem, Yosef ben Simoi sent a gift to each one of the members of the ruling party who had come willingly to put out the fire, shtei slayim. He gave them a hefty, nice gift. Ula Irpakus Shebahem, and the chief of all of them, right? He was the commander in chief of the entire group, Chamishim Slev, sent him a very large, hefty gift because they had the will and the desire to put out the fire. Kshashom Chachom B'dover Amru Loyet Sarach Lekach. Maybe this was not the best thing to do. Why? Just one second. what wasn't the best thing to do. You know, it's the Hasidus above the letter of the law of Yosef ben Simai to protest against their putting out the fire, that wasn't necessary. Sherei Shaninu, because the Mishnah says Nochri Shabal Chavos Ein Omrim Lo Kabevi Al Techava, meaning you don't have to protest and say Al Techava. You could let them do what they have to do on their own. Now, is there an implicit critique here of Yosef ben Simoi, as if to say maybe his chassidus was misplaced? I don't think so, because the Gemara and the Braisa point out that he was motivated with Nei Kvod HaShabbos. The Chachomim felt compelled to add their own comment, so they shouldn't think that, you know, Yosef ben Simoi sort of is contradicting the Mishnah, and they shouldn't differentiate, and they shouldn't mix the two, you know, Midas Chassidus with Ikar HaDin. It was very important that people know Ikar HaDin. A guy comes to put out the fire, you're allowed to let him put out the fire. However, Aval Katan Shebal HaChavos Ein Shom Le'Mnei Shevisoso Alehem Shamet Minei, from the fact that it says about a Katan who comes on his own initiative to put out the fire, the Gedolim, the older people, have to prevent him from doing so, we derive the Katan Ochel Nevelos Bezen Mitzuvin Ol Lafrisho, that if a child on his own initiative wants to eat non-kosher food, Bezdin would have to do whatever they can to be mafresh him and to prevent him from violating the Isra Achilus Nevelos, and who had din, the same law would apply to any Avera in the Torah. And therefore we have to prevent and inhibit this child from putting out the fire on Shabbos because of that Avera. Now, there is a Mandiyomer Mesechta Yevamos that's of the opinion that if a child on his own initiative takes Nevela into his mouth, Ein Bezdin Mitzuvin Lafrisho. And therefore, the Gemara wants to defend that Mandiyomer based on and reconcile that with our Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan, Bekot Nosa Kein Ladas Aviv, that we can reinterpret our Mishnah and we can assume that the father was there with his son. And it was clear to the Katan that the father would be very happy if he, the Katan, would put out the fire on behalf of the Gadol. And that's equivalent to as if the father had commanded his son to put out the fire. And in such a case, you have to prevent the child from doing so. So the Gemara asks, the Kavasa Gabi Nochri de Ka'ovid Ledaite de Israel, why not apply the same yardstick to the case of a guy? He also knows that it's Noach li Yisrael. He comes to put it out. Mishari? Is it mutter to allow him, according to Rabbi Yochanan, to go ahead and put the fire out? The Mishnah seems to imply that you can allow the Kohen, the guy, to put out the fire. So why can't you allow the Katan, even if it's Noach Ledas Aviv, to put out the fire? So Gemara answers, Nochri Ledaiti Dinafshe Aviv. In other words, with regard to the Katan, we're going to say Al Daiti De Aviv Ka Aviv. He really wants to satisfy his father. He knows his father really wants him to put out the fire. And that's a kind of active, so to speak, participation in the child's Avera. And therefore you have to stop that. You have to prevent the child from putting out the fire. But with regard to a guy, we have a different principle, and that's called Nochri Ledaite Denafshe Ka'ovid. In other words, even though he knows that it's good for the Jew, and the Jew would be happy if he put it out, but that's not his interest. He knows that he's going to get paid and compensated for putting out this fire. So he's really doing it self-motivated. And therefore we don't even see a kind of Zochen Li'Adam Shlichus. There's no Shlichus whatsoever. The Gadol, the Nochri, is doing it Al Das Atzmo, and you don't have to prevent. And here we get up to the next mission on the bottom of Kuvchof Aleph Amid Aleph. And the Mishnah is going to discuss the question of covering a Nair, or covering tzoa, covering over a scorpion. And the Mishnah says, Kofin ka'ara al gabi aner, b'shvil shel techos bakora. We allow you on Shabbos to take a plate, a bowl, let's say it's made of earthenware, and cover the candle, the lamp, so that the fire, if it's getting too high, should not catch up in the ceiling. And this would seem to be, at the very least, a violation of the Muktzah laws, which we'll discuss in just a minute. But perhaps there's a very urgent need to put out the fire, and we're going to allow taking what normally wouldn't be allowed to take and put this kara on top, on over the bowl, over the nair. But Bilvan, he has to make sure that there's no immediate repercussion to his action, that as soon as he puts the bowl over the nair, it immediately is extinguished. Because that would be Meleches Mechaba. Now, how exactly is he going to avoid this if he's covering the nair? So the Magen Avraham writes that he has to leave a little bit of airspace between the kli and the nair, so he's not actually strangling or removing all oxygen from the nair, so the nair could continue being lit. Now, there's a similar halacha in the Mishnah, and we'll add the word chen, v'chen, you're allowed to cover with that bowl, soa shel katan, right, the excrements of a child. And once again, we have to understand what this case is, because there would seem to be a violation of muktzah, and again, I'll explain that in just a minute. And v'chen al akrav shelo tishach, he's allowed to place a bowl over a scorpion to protect himself from being bitten by the scorpion. Omar Rab Yehuda, Maisev Bol, Ifnei Rab Yochanan Ben Zakkai Ba'arav, I should say. In other words, a place that was called Arav. And what happened in that story? Apparently a person took a kara, and he covered the akrav, he caught this scorpion. The Omar, and Rabbi Yochanan made a comment of Choshashani lo michatas, that maybe he is violating the Iser of Tzeda, which is one of the 39 Melachas, and he's chayv achatas. In other words, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, if the Akrav is running after him, okay, that's one thing. But if the Akrav is just there, wherever he is, and he covers it, then that might be an Iser Tzeda. Again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doesn't say it's definitely a violation of Tzeda, but there's a Chashash Tzeda over here. Now let's take this Mishnah again from the top. When you are covering a Nair with a Kara, then we might have here a Muktzah problem. And why is that? Because back on Daf Mem Gimel, in Parakira, we learned the sugya of Rabbi Yitzchak, called Ein Kli Nital El Tzork Dovra Nital. And you're only allowed to move something for the sake of something else, which itself you're allowed to move, is Mutabit Tiltul. Now, in our Mishnah, he's trying to protect the Korah, right, which is the beam in his roof, from the fire as it rises. The kar itself is Einon Nitelis B'Shabbos. So to take the kara and cover the nair would seem to be a violation of Rabbi Yitzchak's principle. He's taking a kli litzorech dover she'eino nital. But if we assume that our Mishnah is talking about a case where he needs the place of the kara, and he's allowed to move the kara litzorech makoma, so in other words, independent of this story about covering the nair because of the fire that threatens his roof, he's allowed to move the kara because it's litzorech makoma, once he moves the karal tzoch makomo, he's allowed to put it down anywhere he wants, even over the ner. And if he doesn't need the makom akara, then he's not allowed to be metaltel the kara in order to cover the ner. That's what comes out according to one school of thought. Rashi is at the head of it. But the Rif and the Rambam Paskin, that we don't accept the view of Rabbi Yitzchak. We hold you're allowed to move a kli, even for the sake of something that's an eno nitol b'shavas. That's how the Shulchan Aruch Paskins and Orchaim Siman Shin Yud. And therefore, even if he doesn't need the makom of the kara, he's allowed to move the kara in order to cover the ner. And again, as far as the Isur Kibui is concerned, we're going to have to insist that he does it in a way in which he will not put out the ner. He will just contain the ner so it doesn't rise and get fanned and get into such a large bonfire that'll burn his whole house down. Now, in terms of the case of the akrav, are we talking about a dangerous akrav, a scorpion whose bite would threaten the life of a person? If that would be the case, then if it's a what's called an akrav hamemis, that's a life-threatening akrav, then certainly it's mutter to kill him, even be a dayim. Forget about covering it with a kara. Here in our Mishnah, we're talking about an akrav that is not a life-threatening akrav. Again, he will bite you, and he will damage you, he will be mitzayer you, you'll be in pain. The Chachamim allowed capturing him by putting a kli on top. And even though we don't allow capturing animals on Shabbos, but that's only if he wants to take the animal for himself. That's called Tzorech L'davar Nitzot. But here, he's only capturing it in order to save himself from the Neshichas Ha'akrav. That's called the Malach Shein Tzvich Leguf, which is only also the Rabbanon. And the Rabbanon now are going to lift their Issa, the Rabbanon, for the sake of protecting him from Hezek. Okay. Now, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, apparently Malach Shein Tzvich Leguf is Chayev. Therefore, even though the Seder is not considered Litzorot Dover HaNitzot, he has no interest in taking the Akrav, he's just trying to save himself, nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Rabbi Shimon, and he holds that Malach Shein Tzvich Leguf is Chayev. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai apparently accepted the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore, unless there's some danger or so, then we have a problem of Tzedah, despite the fact that he's Eino Tzarech L'Davar HaNitzot. Now, there is an interpretation of our Mishnah offered by the Bahag, the Baal Halachas Gedolos, and he says that our Mishnah is the source for what we say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Malach Shein Tzvich Leguf is Chayev. But Tosus suggests, and this is back on Daf Tzadi Dalid, that the source of the Machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is the Mishnah on Tzadi Gimel Amid Beis. And even though Rabbi Shimon holds that Malach Hashem Yitzricha Legufa is Potter, nevertheless, it's awesome in Rabbanon. Here they were Matarit L'Chatchila because of the possible danger that might be involved. Or alternatively, because of the Tsar. Now, there are a whole bunch of comments here of the Gaon Mivilna, that the Tanakama of our Mishnah against Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai holds that Malach Shein Tzvich Leguf is Patur, and even though it's awesome in Rabbanon, if there's an outside chance of Sakana, then it's Mutter. I would have said because of the Tzar, but Makom Tzar L'Gozer Rebbe Rabbanon. In any event, Rabbi Yehuda holds that Malach Shein Tzvich Leguf is an Isur Torah, and therefore he's not going to allow you to cover the Akrav with a Kara, because this is not a sakana, technically. Again, the language of Chosh Hashani here is a bit difficult. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says Chosh Hashani, it sounds like he wasn't really clear, he wasn't certain that he'd be chayev here for tzedah under the law of Malach Shein Tzvich Legufa. Rabbi Yehuda somehow learned and derived from this story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that Melach Sheni Tzricha Leguf is Chayv HaChatos. And it's not exactly clear how he made that deduction, because we're talking about Chosh Hashani. Rabbi Yehuda apparently held that it was a Dover Posh to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that Melach Sheni Tzricha Leguf is Chayv Aleha. He had a suffix in the case of Akrav, because in Hilchus Tzedo there's a halacha called Yesh B'mino Nitzod, and then there's something called Ein B'mino Nitzod. And if it's Ein B'mino Nitzod, then there's no Chiyuv of Tzedo. Here, according to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, we're not sure how to classify the Akrav, if it's B'mino Nitzod. And therefore, it might be B'mino Tzedon, stay away. But clearly, he's holding that Melach Sheni Tzricha Legufa is Asur Midaraisa. The Gemara quotes Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, Rabbi Hanan bar Rava, Iklu Lebei Ovin Demin Nishikaya. So we have a meeting here between a whole group of Amoroim in a house of Ovin. The Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba, two out of these Amoroim, and now we're on Kufchav Aleph Amid Beis, Aisi Luhu Puryasa. They brought out beds for them to sit on, couches. But Rav Hanan bar Rava lo aisule. Strange. They didn't bring a couch for him to sit on. They put him on the karka, on the ground. Ashkeche. Rav Hanan found Ovin Masni Le Lebre when he was teaching his son, and he was teaching our Mishnah, and he taught him Al Tsoa Shal Katon Kofin Karabne Mibnei HaKatan. We will cover the Tsoa of a Katon with a Kara. And why? Mibnei Shakatan HaKatan Shalo Yisachik Bov Yislachlich, in order to maintain the hygiene and the cleanliness of the katan. He shouldn't step in the tzoa. Omale, so Rav Hanan said to Ovin, Ovin, shatya masne shtusa libne. In other words, Rav Hanan found out about, he witnessed Ovin teaching this to his son about our mission about covering the tzoa, and he said to him, You're teaching shtus, you're teaching meaningless things to your son by telling him that the reason why we're going to kofer the kara on the tzoa is because of the necessity to protect the katan from getting himself dirty. He says the following, Valohi atzma Muchenes leklovim. In other words, the assumption apparently of Ovin is that we have a serious mukta problem here with regard to the tzoa, and as a result, we're only going to allow it when absolutely necessary. So, Rav Hanan says to Ovin, "That's silly. There's no mukta problem in tzoa. Why? Because he atzma muchenes leklovim. It's animal. It's roi for animals. And therefore, if he would want to, he doesn't have to be kofal of a sakli. He could literally lift up the tzoa and personally put it into the rubbish bin. Lashlich al ashpa. Now again, we have to understand, according to Ovin, what are we going to do with our Mishnah? Okay, that we'll come back to, because the Mishnah insists on Kofin and Sakara. But logically, at this point, Rav Hanan analyzes the situation, the status of Tzoa, and he says it's not Mukta. There's no need for you to be Kofa Lava Sakara. And V'chi Temed Delo Chazile Miesmol. And you may say, well, this wasn't in the world yesterday, right? The Kutton had this excrement today, and therefore it's only today when he eliminated this tzoa, that's called nolad. And nolad means that anything that wasn't in the world going into Shabbos is nolad, is mukta on Shabbos, vatsanya. But I'm going to quote to you a braisa with regard to tchumin on yontif. And the halacha is that just like a person is not allowed to walk on Shabbos outside or beyond the 2,000 Amah resident radius from his house. So to on Yom Tov, the same restriction applies. And Kelov Ubehemto, as far as his utensils and his animal, is Ein Shum Adam Yachalo Licha Michutz Alpayim Amah. Not only is there an Isur Tchumen on the person to walk out of the city limits 2,000 Amah, but none of his Kelim or his animals are allowed to go that far. Nevertheless, the Brisa says, Naharos Hamoshkin Umayanos Hanovim Hare Hein Kiragle Kol Adam. If you have waters that are drawing, right, you have streams or rivers that are drawing their waters from far away, or you have mayonos, which are springs, and they are springing, I guess you'd call it. They are gushing water, I think that would be another way of saying it, is then these bodies of water are not kona shvisa b'makom mesuyam. It means they're not limited to a certain location because they're on the move. Is there therefore harehein kiragle kol adam? In other words, anyone could pick up the water, carry it, and he could take it wherever he is allowed to walk. In any way, the brisa which permits you to be metaltel the mayim. This could teach us something about mukta, that if it's okay, if it's permissible, then even though this water was not here on Erev Yom Tov, it came from the springs or from the rivers on Yom Tov itself. It certainly was not accessible on Yom Tov. We're talking about flowing, gushing bodies of water. Nevertheless, it's not mukta. And the reason for that is because already on Erev Yom Tov, you can calculate, you can anticipate that people will draw water from this Mayan, from this spring, or from this Nahar, from this river, and that doesn't become Mukta. So whenever you can anticipate something over the course of time is going to come into existence, even though it came to existence actually on Yom Tov itself, it's Mutta. And therefore, says Rav Hanan, we can apply that same logic to Tzoah, even though this Tzoah wasn't here on Erev Yom Tov, but he knew that there would be Tzoah, and he could give it to the Klovim, and it's predictable that this Tzoah would come into existence on Yom Tov, therefore it's not Muktzah. Now Ovin, you know, when he hears this, he's going to turn back to Rav Hanan, and he's going to say to him, V'ela hechi asne, right, if you're telling me that Tzoah's Katan is not Muktzah, so how am I going to learn this Mishnah that says Kofin Karal Atzoah Shel Katan? So Rav Hanan answers, Ema Altzoah Shel Tarnagolin Mipnei Katan. That you're allowed to take a bowl and cover the Tzoah of Tarnagolim, which is Mukta, because even the Klovin won't eat the feces of a chicken, and you're allowed to do this Mipnei Katan, because if the Katan plays around with the Tzoah of a Tarnagolis, he's going to get dirty. So when the Mishnah says, Al Tzoah Shel Katan, it doesn't mean on the Tzoah of a Katan, but Mipnei HaKatan, because of the Katan. In other words, to protect the Katan from having the contact with this Tzoah, and then being Mislachi. So Kadesh Lo Yitanev, he's going to cover the Tzoah with a Kara. So Gemara asks, V'tepek Lei Davi Graf Shel Re'i. Forget about the fact that the katan will be mislachlik b'tzoah. You're allowed to remove the tzoah directly because it's a graf shel re'i. And we have a principle called graf shel re'i, a kli that's full of tzoah, that's full of this, some sort of repugnant stuff, that kind of rubbish. We're allowed to get rid of it. And they were matir tiltul b'shabbos to take something that's a graf shel re'i and throw it into the ashpa. So why doesn't it apply to this tzoah? Rechitam, and if you'll say that graf shel re'i agav mona in, but igufo lo, maybe when they were matir, moving tzoah inside a kli, it's only if it's inside a kli, then they were matir tiltul. but they didn't go as far as to allow you to take the tzo itself, be your daim directly. And therefore, our Mishnah, when it says you're allowed to be metaltel the tzoa, it doesn't say that you're allowed to take the tzoa directly. It only says that you're allowed to be kofal of a sakli. You could cover it with a kara. So the Gemara says that's impossible. That is an untenable position. Why? Veha, there was a story of Ahu Achbar. So we're talking about a rat. Dishtakach, and they found it. Beisparmoke de Ravashi. Isparmoke are the fragrant spices of Ravashi. I guess the mouse also likes that fragrant smell. Fiomalahu, Ravashi told his household, Nikotu Bitsutsise Viafkua. Okay, so we're not talking about a chicken excrement here, right? We're talking here about spices, and Ravashi instructed his family members to take hold of this achbar by its tail and throw it out, remove it. So in other words, you see that when you have something like a graf shel re'i, like the vessel of excrement, which is absolutely repugnant, then you get rid of it with directly remove it by your hands. You don't need to put it into a kli and remove the kli. So if this achbar is offensive to people, then just pick it up by hand. That is what Ravashi is instructing, and throw it out. So again, we come back to our Mishnah, which we've interpreted as chicken feces. So why do you have to cover it over with a kli? Why can't you just throw it out directly with your hands? So the Gemara answers that our Mishnah is talking about tzoa, which is already inside an ashpa, right? It's already in the rubbish pile. And therefore, it's not directly in front of him. It's not repulsive for him. And therefore, they weren't metaltel, they weren't matir, a complete heter of tiltel. So what they did is, instead of taking it directly, picking up the tzoa, this chicken tzoa, and throw it out directly with your hands, you should take it out with a kli. And the reason why they allowed it is in order that the katan should not be mislachlich. So Gemara asks for katan biashvamai boile. What is the katan doing in the rubbish bin? You know, that we want to cover the feces so the child shouldn't be soiled. Well, what's he doing in the rubbish bin if that's where the feces, the chicken feces, is? And Gemara says b'chotzer, the tzoa in our Mishnah was lying in a courtyard, and that's where the children play. And once again, he's afraid that the child will become soiled from contact with this chicken feces. So since the katan is very much matzui, you know, it's very common that he should be in the chatzah, that's where he hangs out, we have a chashash that he might come and be soiled by the chicken feces, and therefore they allowed covering over the chicken feces with a kara. So Gemara asks, chatzer nami, even if I allow you, in the case of a chatzer, to take away the feces, because we're also living in the chatzer, so to speak, it's also part of our domicile, is then it should have the same status as a graf shel re'i. In the case of a graf shel re'i, which is the utensil for the excrement, we were matir taking out the tzoa from the house, because it's so repulsive to him. So here too, in a chatzer, he's living in the chatzer, it's an extension of his house, and we should allow him to be metaltel a graf shel re'i. So once again, back to the Mishnah, why does the Mishnah require that you cover the tzoa? And the Gemara answer is no. The tzoa in our Mishnah is not in a chatzer, a regular classic courtyard, but be ashpa shebechatzer. it's already in the rubbish bin out in the courtyard. So they weren't metaltel, they weren't matir to be metaltel a graf shel re'i in the chotzer, if it's in the ashpa shel v'chotzer, it's already in the rubbish bin. But the katan who's out there in the chotzer, that's where he hangs out, so for his sake, they would allow covering over the tzoa. And that's what our mission is, that the children are found in this vicinity, and therefore you're allowed to cover the tzoa with a bowl. So, when it comes to child's feces, the conclusion here of Agamara seems to be clear. There's no mukta, they're fit for dogs. And Rabbi Yerucham extends this to include adult feces as well. But in the case of Tzor Shel Tarnagolim, here it's not fit for dogs, and therefore it has the status of mukta, unless it's a graf shel re'i. So chicken feces are mukta. In a residential area where people be repulsed by them, you're allowed to remove them because of graf shel re'i. The Ran based himself on a different reading in the Gemara. He doesn't distinguish between human feces and chicken feces, and he says both are unfit for Shabbos use and both are mukta. And you can only move them away in a residential area when people be repulsed by them, midin, graf shel re'i. And the Beis Yosef seems to assume that that's the way the Torah paskins, and that's the end of that story. Now, we go back to the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says you're allowed to turn over the bowl on a nair and also on a scorpion, so that he shouldn't be bitten. Omer Rav Yeshua ben Levi, kol ha-mazikin ne'erogin b'Shabbos. Anything that could damage a person, and maybe even kill a person, we have to see what the word mazikin means, then you kill that creature on Shabbos. You're allowed to kill the creature on Shabbos. You might even be obligated to kill the creature if it's a real pikuach nefesh. No, at this point, the Gemara, in its development, doesn't think that we're talking about a case of pikuach nefesh. In other words, this is not a life-threatening situation. Nevertheless, Rabbi Shua ben Levi allows you to kill the mazik because of the outside, shall we say, potential, if that mazik could kill a human being. And we go back to the drawing board of Rabbi Shimon of Melach Shen Tzich LeGufa, and therefore the Issur is reduced from a Doraisa to Rabbanon, and here in this case, the Rabbanon are not going to insist on the Gzera, they're going to drop the Gzera because of this outside chance of a danger. Masiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef has a kash from a brisa. The brisa says, Chamisha, five categories of mazikin, they're rugged, and you're allowed to kill them on Shabbos. Why? Because they have a propensity to kill. The Eluhim, Zvuv Shebi Eretz Mitzrayim. And now we're talking about a certain fly that inhabits, that is found, you know, indigenous to the land of Egypt. Tzira Shebi Nineveh. We're talking about a hornet in Nineveh. Akrav Shebi Chadvia. Now, I'm not sure where Chadvia is, but we're talking about a scorpion in an area where it's very dangerous. We're not sure, maybe it's somewhere near Iraq. Anyway, Nachash Sheberetz Yisrael, and the serpents in Israel are dangerous. Kelev Shota B'chol Mokom, and a rabid dog is dangerous anywhere on the face of the earth. Mani. So Rav Yosef wants to know, to whom can we attribute the authorship of this brisa that it enumerates these five categories of mazikin hanerogim v'shabbos? Elaim Rav Yehuda. If we're going to go like Rav Yehuda, ha'amar melach shen tzich l'gufa chayev aleha. So even though he has no interest in taking the creature for himself, so where's the tzeda here? But the answer is that we're going like Rav Yehuda, that melach shen tzich l'gufa is chayev. So when he kills these mazikin, and it's not being done for the purpose of killing them, in other words, he's not interested in taking the neshama, so to speak, but it still remains a malacha asura. And if he's doing it in order to save himself so that and protect himself from hezek, he's going to be chayav for that malacha of netilas neshama if he kills these any of these creatures. And yet the brisa says neragim v'shamis. Ella, by process of elimination, we have no choice. We have to attribute this, the authorship of this brisa, to Rabbi Shimon, who holds a malach shen tzricha legufa as patur. And now the Yisr is reduced to an Yisr shvus to Rabbanon. Here the Rabbanon lo gozru. Ah, vahani hu deshari achrini lo. I don't understand Rabbi Shimon ben Levi. He has to enumerate five categories, five species, as if to say these and no others. Achirim lo. Why is that so? The Gemara is really intending now to compare Rabbi Shimon ben Levi to this last brisa that Rabbi Yosef quoted. The brisa tells us that there's a list of five creatures that can be killed on Shabbos, and even though right now there's not a pressing pikuach nefesh, they're not chasing anybody, but nevertheless these five creatures are very dangerous. They have the potential and a propensity to attack people. So we're going to consider the potential danger, and even though there's no actual danger, we're going to knock these creatures out. We're going to kill them on Shabbos. However, in the light of the Braisa, which is Tanoim, how do we understand Rabbi Shimon Levi? Rabbi Shimon Levi went a step further, and he said, Kol ha-mazikim ne-rogim b'Shabbos, as if to say, any creature which potentially could be dangerous, it doesn't have to be these five that have a propensity to be dangerous, you're allowed to kill them on Shabbos. And the Bryce itself is reflecting the sheet of Rabbi Shimon that we don't have a Malacha d'oraisa because it's a Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, but on a Drabana level we're going to allow this. And you can kill, but only these five species. Not, you know, carte blanche, whereas Rabbi Shimon Levi has no limitations. So how do we reconcile this? On Rabbi Yirmiya, Uman Neimalon Doham Itarzahi, how do you know that this brisa that you're asking from, meaning the brisa of Rabbi Yosef, that we limit the heter to kill these five categories, these five species, but nothing beyond that. How do you know that price is reliable? Dilma mishabashtahi. Maybe Rabbi Yosef's brisa is a brisa mishubeshes. And what that means is that we're talking about a, shall we call it a corrupt version of a brisa. You can't prove anything from a corrupt version of a brisa. So the halacha that Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi taught us, that you're allowed to kill all mazikim on Shabbos, is a correct halacha. Don't build any contrary views based on a brisa, which is a mishubeshta. It's a corrupt version of the brisa. The Gemara is going to tell us later on that Rav Yosef actually had this brisa, but the Beis Medrash of Rav Chiya and Rav Yoshia, they didn't have this brisa. And we have a principle that whenever there's a brisa that comes outside of the Beis Medrash of Rav Chiya and Rav Yoshia, we have doubts as to whether or not the brisa is reliable. And that's how Rashi interprets his Gemara. And Rav Chiya is so reliable in brises because he only transmits brises that he himself heard from Rebbe, Rav Yehuda Nasi. The Gemara, for example, Yevamah says, Machlokes masnisin ustama bebraisa mai. What happens if we have a machlokes in a Mishnah, we have a stoma in a braisa? Should we rely on the stoma against a suffix in the Mishnah? And Amale Rebbe, Loshana, Rebbe Loshana Rav Chiya Minola. In other words, only if we know that this brisa is part of the transmission, the Mesoros HaTorah, it's reliable, it's authoritative, then you're going to paskin like a brisa. But otherwise, every brisa might be, if it's not in the, you know, in the canon of Rav Oshia and Rav Chiya, it might be suspect to be mishubeshes. So my answer is, Om Rav Yosef, I know masnisale. I brought this brisa, v'yosivnale, and I was the one who asked this from this brisa, Kashon Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, V'yanah, give me the opportunity, mitaritznala. I would like to interpret this price in a way that it doesn't contradict Rabbi Shimon Levi, and you don't have to throw out this price and into the trash and say that it's Mishubeshta, because when Rabbi Yeshua says that you can kill any species, which is called Kol HaMazikin, it's Beratzu Achrav. When you see that the Mazikin are making that move, you know, they're shooting out towards someone, and you have every reason to believe that any of these Mazikin, way beyond the limit of five, are potentially, you know, life-threatening. They might be killers, and therefore you have to kill them because of Pikuach Nefesh. V'direi Akol, and therefore the statement of Rabbi Shimon Levi has nothing to do with the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about Melach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. We're talking about killing these mazikim once they're in the, you know, in the plunging mode, and it's pikuach nefesh. The Bryce itself is saying that there are only five mazikim where we could be matir, killing them, even if lo hayu ratzam achrav. They're not, you know, in that plunge. They're not running after anybody. And that b'risa reflects the shita of Shimon, that melach shein tzricha l'gufa is only mid'rabbanan. And the Chacham and Akenu implement and insist on their gzera of an isa shvus rabbanan melach shein tzricha l'gufa in the case of chamisha mazikin elu. Rabbi Yehuda holds melach shein tzricha l'gufa is chayev. He would not be matir killing even the five species of mazikin, since they're not rotzim akrov, and there's no and presently we don't have any pikuach nefesh. Now the Gemara quotes a story about harigas nechoshim vakrov on Shabbos. Tana kamei de rova bar Rav Huna. So one of the chachamim that used to teach over the brises in front of Rava and present them, he said the following: Ahoreg nechoshim vakrov b'Shabbos ein ruach shalcha chasidim nochay menu. Those who kill serpents and scorpions on Shabbos, the attitude, the spirit of the Chacham is not of Chasidim, of those who are very pious, is not happy with that. They don't consider this the right thing to do. Amar Leih, so Rava said to the Tana, the Osan Chasidim, those who are very pious, who are machmir, ein ruach chachamim nochemen. We shouldn't be happy with them. We should think that it's a better thing for a person to kill the choshen v'akrav on Shabbos. Because even if right now they're not endangering anyone, they might be mazik someone if they get angry down the line. Let's take all the precautions, all the security measures. So the Gemara answers, who pliga the Rav Huna, and this approach of Rava is against that of Rav Huna. Because when Rav Huna expressed his opposition to that Chacham, then he's really against Rav Huna. And why is that so? And the answer is, to Rav Huna Chazilahu Gavra, he saw a person, to Kokotel Zibura, he killed a hornet, Amar Leih, and Rav Huna said to that person, Shalem Sinu Lechulhu, which literally translates as V'chi Garamta Larog Bekachas Kol Atziros, meaning, what did you accomplish here by killing an individual hornet? There are so many hornets in the world. You know, if you would have taken on all the hornets in the world is one thing. In any event, we see that we can derive from Rav Huna that it's not permissible to kill Mazikin if right now they're not threatening to kill you. And that's against the piece that we had here before about Rava, that Rava was matir killing Nechoshim v'akravim Shabbos because they may possibly be mazik. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisan, is damdu lo Nechoshim v'akravim im harogon biyaduashin is damdu lo lahargon. This is more of a metaphysical kind of idea, supernatural. If a person actually killed these Nechoshim v'akravim, then you know what? We should understand that these were sent by Shamayim so that he would be the shliach to kill them. And that's called Megalgalin Tzchus Al Yedei Zakai. Lo Harogon. If on the other hand he didn't take the opportunity and the occasion to kill them, then Biyadua, we should know, Shinizdamnu, they were sent Min Shamayim in order to show him that he sinned. And he should have killed them. but rather Nasalo Nesmin Shamayim, he got lucky and he got a miracle from God that God spared him even though he sinned and protected him supernaturally from the death that he could have suffered in the footsteps of his, in the aftermath of his sins, from these akravim and nechoshim. Omar Ula v'itema Rabba Barbachon Omar Rabbi Yochanan. This brisa did not say that if he didn't kill them, that we know that they were sent to kill him, unless it was nishofim bo. Hayu noshfim kiderech shehem koasim. So let's try to translate this statement of Rabba Bar Chana, and that is that the Bryce is referring to snakes that were hissing at him, nishofim bo. Then we could say about this Bryce that we know that they were sent to kill him. A snake hisses when it's aroused to attack its enemy. Now in the case of scorpions, a little bit more problematic, because they don't hiss. So maybe when we find this qualification here of Rabba Bar Bachana with regard to scorpions, maybe we could say they're prone to attack more so than snakes. So the person should always regard himself as having received a miracle from God, even though we didn't see any indication that the scorpion meant to attack him. But that's the nature of a scorpion. Okay. Now, Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Pam achas nofal, who was a nochash that fell echad beveis hamedrish, the Omad no yusi echad. Okay, one guy from Nabatea, and apparently he's a Jew, Rashi says, from Nabatea, which is an ancient Arabic kingdom near Eretz Yisrael. And Harago, and he took the initiative, rose up, and he killed this serpent. Pogabo Adam Kayotsebo. And one similar to it has struck it down. Okay, that's all the Gemara tells us here, is that Omar Rebbe said, Pogabo Kayotsebo. Now, in my beer, he just adds one word, Pogabo Adam Kayotsebo. So let's see exactly what Rebbe is saying over here. Ibailu, the Gemara has a suffix. That which Rebbe said, Pogabo Kayotsebo, did he mean the Shapir of it? Was he giving him a Yashikoyach and telling him he did the right thing by killing the snake? And what he meant to say was that since this nachash is chasing after a person to kill him, then it's very good that you kill the nachash. That's abola hargucha, ashkem lahargo. Olo. Or maybe Rebbe was implying that he didn't do the right thing by killing the nachash, and Rebbe was saying it in a manner of gnai. In other words, he was criticizing him. Shek pagabo adam shehu rasha kinachash. That Rebbe, in criticizing, was saying that he's similar to the nachash. He's an adam rasha for killing on Shabbos. He violated the Shabbos, and he's a rasha like the nachash. Hashma. So the Gemara wants to come to some conclusion in interpreting this story about Rebbe. The Rabbi Abba Breder Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Rabbi Zeir Rabbi Yasve Akila, they were sitting in a room, and the Bei Rav Yanai, apparently this room was on the porch of the house of Rav Yanai. Nofik Milsim Ibinayu, and some milsa, some matter of discussion, I guess, came, or shmua that they were discussing, bo minei mirav yanai. And they asked Rav Yanai, ma'u larug nechosh v'akrom b'shabbos, so you're allowed to kill scorpions and snakes on Shabbos. Amalahu, Tzira ani horig, but nochas v'yakrov lo kolshke. If I kill a hornet, which I think is not as dangerous as a snake or a scorpion, how much more so would I allow killing that which is more dangerous, namely a snake or a scorpion? So if we go back to the story of the Nayusi, that Nabataean, then we assume that Rebbe gave him a yashakayach, and he was doing the right thing by killing the nachash. So the Gemara rejects this. Dilma, perhaps Rebbe Yanai did not permit the killing of these dangerous mazikin unless lefi tumo, which means that you didn't have, or the one who killed them did not have a deliberate intention to kill them. In other words, he was walking and he saw a nachash or an akrav in his way. So, eino tzarcha leches l'makom acher, he doesn't have to run away from them. He's allowed to continue in his way. And if he steps on them and kills them while he's walking, that's not an iser. He didn't have kavana to kill them. He was just walking on his way. But how do you know that, and how do I know, the Gemara says, that this would be mutter? The Omer of Yehuda, Rav Yehuda said, roke, if there's saliva on the earth, dar salafi tumo, he's allowed to step on it as he's walking without any kavana, even though he's involved in what's called mimareach esarok, which means that he is somewhat smoothening this roke, and he's pushing it into the karka. As a result, if there are any crevices in the karka, he's smoothing them out, which is a problem of memachik or possibly bone or choresh, but whatever it is, he's doing it inadvertently, and he's not chayef any of the malachas hasuros that possibly could have been candidates. Why? Because he's not miskaving lekach. And on a Doraisa level, for sure, if he's not miskaving, he would not be violating any Issa Doraisa. And worst case scenario, it would be Divrei Chachamim. But, you know, there's a disgusting roke over here, so the Chachamim are going to allow him, they're going to permit him to step on the roke. The Amar of Sheshes, the same thing applies to a Nochash. That dar solafi tumo, as long as he's walking without kavana, he's allowed to step on it and kill it. V'yomar rav ketina, akrav dar solafi tumo, the same thing applies to a scorpion. But we see clearly that the only condition or permissibility is only if he's killing these mazikim toch kidei darko, in other words, that he's not miskaving, but to deliberately kill them, that we see is not permissible. And if that be the case, then the Gemara is saying, Dilma, perhaps we can reject you had a raya from the case of Rav Yanai. Right? Rav Yanai was asked about killing Nechoshim Vakrav, and he said, well, if I kill a tzarah, certainly I'd kill Nechoshim Vakrav, and maybe that heter of Rav Yanai was limited to a case of Lefitumo, where he didn't have Kedarko. And perhaps, getting back to the Nebetiyot and the story with Rebbe, maybe Rebbe really criticized him because that wasn't the case of Lefitumo. The Gemara now brings a story about Rok, which was on the Karka on Shabbos, and Abba Bar Marta, who's otherwise known as Abba Bar Minyomi, Havi Komaski Bay, Debay Reish Galusa Zuzi. Now, there's some sort of a debt over here, and who owes money to whom? So we're talking about Abba Bar Manyumi. He owes members, owes money to the Bay Reish Galusa, the members of the Reish Galusa's household. Aisu Kometzarile. They brought him to the Reish Galusa's home, or call it a palace, and they were pressing him and tormenting him to pay back the money. Havishdi Ruka. Right, there was some spittle that was lying on the ground before them on Shabbos. Amalu Reish Galusa Aisu Mana Schifu Ale. So Reish Galusa said to them, bring a vessel and invert it over the spittle. In other words, because it's the sight of the spittle was repulsive, and let's say there was no one around to remove it, or maybe it was lying in a place where it's also to remove it, so that there was an alternative, and pour the vessel, to turn over the vessel on top. Amalechu, so Bar Marta said to them, Lo tzrichusa, you don't even have to bother with that. Why? Because Hachi Amar Rabbi Yehuda Rok Dar Solifitumo. He quoted the same member of Rabbi Yehuda that we had before, that if a person is treading inadvertently, innocently, on a spittle that's on the ground, he's allowed to do so. So now the Reish Galusa hears this. Amalu Tsumi Rabbananu. I see that he's really a young, budding scholar. He's a rabbinic scholar. He's a Talmud Chacham. Shavku, let him alone. Don't torment him. Amalahu. Just one second. Okay, so now we have the story of Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana in the case of the snake that fell into the study hall. And the Gemara is now going to quote three other statements of Rav Chanina. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Omar Rabbi Chanina. Pomotos, which are lamps made out of metal, and they are asuyos. They are made kikana, like one piece of metal, and nosim v'tocham shemen, they pour oil into them, uberasham nimtzeis hapsila, and on the top they put in a wick, shel beis Rebbe, and this is what they had, these pamotos, in the house of Rebbe, mutal l'taltalon b'shabbos. So Rabbi Chanina was matir tiltal on these pamotos. Omalei Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Zeira, who heard this transmission from Rabbi Abba in the name of Rabbi Chanina, he says to him, what kind of pamotos would Rabbi Chanina allow the tiltal of the Shabbos? Under what circumstances, under what conditions would he allow this? Benitolin biyodo achas. It would seem that he would only allow this, according to one side in Rabbi Zeira's Sofek, if he carries the pamot with one hand. Oh, in the other side of his sofek, the heter tiltul, even in these menorahs gedolos, would apply even in menorahs gedolos, that b'shtei yodayim, that could only be moved if you carry it with two hands. Omaleis, Rabbi Abba responded that Rabbi Chanina was only mater osam shel beis avich, only those small ones that could be taken with one hand and carried, but the larger menorahs is also a taltal on the Shabbos, that's mukta, because something that is designated for a certain place and you keep it in that location, you don't usually move it around, that's called kovelo makom, that's real mukta. Now we get to another din of Rabbi Abba transmitting in the name of Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Abba, Barakado Rabbi Chanina, Kronos, and these are wagons that are used to carry human beings in the human carriages, shel beis Rebbe, and they were common in the house of Rebbe, mutal taltal b'shabbos. So once again, Rabbi Zeir is going to raise the same suffix that he did before, and he's going to ask Rabbi Abba, on what kind of carriages was Rabbi Chanina mater? Benitolim b'yodam echad. These are carriages that can be taken by one person, or shall we say, even if they cannot be taken and moved by, carried by one person, el b'shtei b'nei odom, you need two people, even that he was matir, tiltal. Amaleis, Rabbi Abba responded, no, Rabbi Chanina was not matir, ela, only ka'osan kronos shel beis avich, those are the smaller ones that in the tolen b'demechon, but then you have those that require two people, then we don't allow tiltal mimakom lemakom. Once again, because Adam Kovelo Mokom, they are so massive and heavy, they're like those Pomotos Gedolos, and therefore, since they cannot be moved with one person, in this case you need two, that makes it muktzah. Amarad, the third halacha of Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana is hita lehem Rabbi Chanina lebeis Rabbi lishtos yayin bekronos shel nochri, to drink Jewish wine that was being carried and transported by the caravans of goyim. And even if the barrels of wine were chasumos only bechosem echad, normally we require shtei chasimos, we require two seals. But shel beis Rabbi Chanina was mate drinking the wine, it's not a sofek yayin nesach, even if there's only one seal on the barrel of wine. So Rabbi Chanina says, Rabbi Abba turns to Rabbi Chanina and he says, lo yadana, I don't know. What's the heter here, Rabbi Chanina? Is it mishum de sovralok, Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that yayin in general is muta with one seal? Or perhaps you need two seals, and that's the Chachomim Shita against Rabbi Eliezer. But here, these barrels of wine that the Goy was transporting from the Beis Rebbe, there was no chashash that they were opened by the Nochri, Mishumei Basa de Bei Nesia, because the Goy was afraid from the Nasi, and he was the authoritative sovereign ruler, and he was appointed by the Malchus, he was recognized by the Roman government, so it's not kedai to play around with that, and open up the barrels, he had this natural mirsas, this natural fear of doing so, and therefore we could rely on the fact that this is the kosher wine from Beis Rebbe. So we're now up to the Mishnah on Kufchav Beis of an Aleph, and Amir Tz Hashem, tomorrow we'll cover that Mishnah.